one such family, assimilated family of intellectuals, was holding out against that pressure. Some of their relatives and friends had converted, but they themselves were holding out. Other people do that, we don't do that. Yes, we're chazafressing assimilated Jews, but we don't convert to Christianity. It was a brilliant family, had already produced a range of really interesting figures, but the blazing light of this family was born in the 1880s. When he's about 11 years old. Everybody know who I'm talking about? We're talking about the biggest Jewish philosopher of the last 150 years. France. When young France Rosenzweig, the Rosenzweig family. When young France is about 11 years old, famous story told of him that he came home from school and he, obviously being France Rosenzweig, obviously brilliant kid, comes home from school and he hands his father his report card and his father looks at it and it's, you know, A, and France is crying. And his father says, "Well, what's wrong, France? We're very proud of this report card. Why are you crying?" And France was reputedly said, "Because none of this interests me. All I want is for someone to teach me Hebrew." Franz Rosenzweig was somehow born in the middle of this incredibly assimilated German Jewish intellectual society, artistic society, with a deep sense of his Jewish identity. Now he goes off and he does things, he goes to university, he leaves medicine, starts studying philosophy, he writes a big PhD on Hegel, he does the whole thing that you're meant to do. And then one very, very eventful night in his early to mid-20s, young Franz is sitting with a cousin of his and another guy who have converted to Christianity, and they have this big, big, long talk all night. At the end of which, they challenge Franz to come up with the answers to the challenges that they have posed his Jewish identity. And Franz turns around and says, "I can't answer you. You're right." Because he just didn't have the tools to do that. He then leaves the conversation, sits in his room with a pistol for a few minutes. Sits with a pistol for a few hours and then decides, "You know what? I'm going to convert to Christianity. If I really, really am this authentic, spiritual, intellectual, philosophical person, I've got no answers. They've got questions. They've got answers. I have to convert." However, he's Rosenzweig, right? He's not just someone who says it. He's Franz Rosenzweig. "I'm not going to go into the Christian church as a pagan. I'm going to go into the church as a Jew. Therefore, I'm going, it's nearly Yom Kippur, I'm going to stand before God on Yom Kippur. And I'm going to make my peace with God as a Jew. And then the next day, I'll go to the church as a purified, cleansed, and religious Jew. It's not up to me to go in as a pagan. I don't know anything about Judaism. I'm going to do that." He goes to some shtibbel in Berlin on Yom Kippur and, of course, has a very, very, very profound experience over that Yom Kippur, and there's never any thought of conversion after that. Rosenzweig writes about this, but he says that the actual, he can't describe what happened to him standing in Yom Kippur in the synagogue. Something about the nature of the relationship between himself and the community and God that happens on Yom Kippur made him realize that Jewish people do not need an intermediary in their relationship with God. They have a direct relationship with God as part of the community. It's a very, very interesting thing, but I want to move on, because then Rosenzweig basically becomes what we would call a chozer b'tshuva. He launches himself into Jewish sources. He's also conscripted to the war. So in 1917, he's sitting in the trenches in Macedonia, and he's writing notes on postcards, sending them back from the trenches to his family so they can preserve it in case he's killed in the trenches in World War I. Those notes formed the basis of Rosenzweig's big, big book. And if you haven't read this book, and you're interested remotely in what's going on in 20th century Jewish thought, I recommend you read it now. Like, leave the talk, go home and get it. The book is called The Star of Redemption. Kochava Geula, the Star of Redemption. Now, as part of his I'm Coming Back into Jewish Sources, Rosenzweig became mates with the very elderly Hermann Cohen. And Hermann Cohen was very, it's all happening in Berlin, was very influential upon Rosenzweig. But Rosenzweig realized that really there's more than just humanity and God going on in this picture. There are, in fact, three entities whose meaning is being grounded and is dependent upon each other. Those three entities are God. I'll use the word man, but I mean humanity. Man. And the world. Those three entities, the first half of the Star of Redemption deals with those three entities, how they are interdependent in their own self-definition upon each other. They're all revealed to each other through a symbiotic relationship of these three entities. In the second half of the book, however, Rosenzweig describes the processes. Remember, Cohen is big on processes. How these being and becoming, how these entities define each other in relation to each other. These processes are unique between each of these entities. God and world are revealed to each other in the process of creation. God and man are revealed to each other in the process of revelation. And man and world are revealed to each other in the process of redemption. That's basically an absolute nutshell, for which I could probably be jailed by the Philosophical Society, but that's it. That is the Star of Redemption for Rosenzweig. There are many, many different views about what Rosenzweig means when he talks about what's going on in here. Some people want to say what's going on in here is the process of Ness, is the process of a miracle, but my reading of Rosenzweig is different, because I think that Rosenzweig posits in here a unique entity that combines all of these. You've got these 6 points, three entities, three processes. What happens inside here to unite them all for Rosenzweig is the concept of Shabbat. Shabbat is revelation, Shabbat is creation, Shabbat is redemption. It's a very, very big... Remember that Rosenzweig has not just read Hegel, and he's not just read Schelling, who he's very influenced by. He's also coming after Kierkegaard, he's coming after Nietzsche. He's trying to critique the whole Enlightenment picture and find for the individual a sense of the processes of meaning in the world. That's what he sees as the primary aim of his philosophy. He's trying also to replace the whole Hegelian dialectic with a new, uniquely Jewish dialectic in the world. This has been, you might look at this and go, very pretty, but I don't see how it's relevant. This has been very, very influential. These terms, these ideas, Rosenzweig is very responsible for bringing these ideas to the fore of 20th century thought. Rosenzweig, in the 1920s, developed, and don't forget that, you know, Rosenzweig then meets a guy who's going to have a very big impact on his life. He's already had a big impact on his life from Hermann Cohen, and then he meets a fellow philosopher also living in Berlin who's going to have a very big influence on his life. That, of course, is Martin Buber. But in the night, and he works with Buber on translations of Tanakh and so on. But as Rosenzweig hits his, basically, the 1920s, in his late 30s, early 40s, he develops a disease known as ALS. It's like a type of motor neuron disease, and it's eating away at his body. He dies at the age of 43 in 1929. In the last few years, he is writing by, he can only move parts of his face, and he's using it to indicate to his wife one letter at a time. We're talking about a guy who had a really, really tough existence, but he produced some phenomenal philosophical ideas.